From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made 9 days from now, next Wednesday, May 19th, when New York State is set to lift most venue capacity restrictions. Governor Andrew Cuomo made the announcement last week, citing vaccination progress and statewide decreases in COVID-19 cases. Over the May 1st weekend, the COVID positivity rate dropped to below 1.5% for the first time since October 28th. Here's how the new guidelines will work. Effective May 19th, most commercial and social event venues, places like gyms, hair salons, retail stores, houses of worship, they can exceed the previously determined limits if all attendees over the age of 4 present either proof of full vaccination or a recent negative COVID-19 test, and the required physical distancing of 6 feet can be accommodated. And according to the state, congregate commercial and social events, such as those at venues that host sports competitions, performing arts and live entertainment, and catered receptions, can exceed the social gathering limits of 500 people outdoors or 250 people indoors if all attendees over the age of 4 present either full proof of vaccination or recent negative COVID-19 test result and the required social distancing can be accommodated. Even though capacity will be allowed to increase, the physical distancing requirements will, as reported by our colleagues at City Magazine, severely curtail capacity at smaller venues. We've heard from a number of local business owners who say those changes are confusing, or they worry that they're going to be modified again, or they don't really get the science behind some of this. They're asking what additional details there might be, when clarification will come, how they can put the new guidelines in place, and how soon. Some indoor venues are wondering if they're even worth it. They say the public is getting excited about reopening, but they don't understand the challenges that venues are facing. So this hour, we have tried to bring in a wide range of venues, different organizations, and local owners about the new guidelines, how they're affecting business, and the plans for the short and the long term. And we've got a lot of guests. And our first is Rena Golden, founder and artistic director of the Avenue Black Box Theater. Rena, welcome back to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
How are you doing? How are you sort of hanging in there with all of this? And how do you view some of these changes that are coming our way here?
How we're doing is a tricky question. It's always a challenge for small grassroots, orgs like myself, like the Avenue Black Box Theater and others to keep it going, to keep the fundraising going, to keep the revenue coming in, to keep the programming going. And so, of course, the pandemic has just increased those challenges for us. But, we've had to be creative about, how we keep it going, because, this is work that I'm passionate about. The artists and collaborators that I work with are passionate about. So we've adapted many different ways of keeping the art flowing, keeping the youth programming flowing, virtually, hybrid models, but staying safe, because that obviously is our first concern, is that people stay safe and we keep our COVID numbers, down, our exposure numbers down. So that continues. That really just continues for us. And I'm definitely really, I'm happy to see that we're moving forward in some positive areas, but I know that we're not out of the woods yet.
Well, and, Rena, I have to admit, I don't fully understand some things about what New York State has done with what we're allowed to do in person. The vaccines, we know, are incredibly effective. And that's a word that I don't use often, but these are some of the greatest vaccines ever made in terms of their efficacy rates. And so they work. And so we still have physical distancing requirements, even though people are going to come into venues like yours and show proof of vaccination. They're going to go to performances. They're going to show proof of vaccination, but they still have to distance, which is still going to limit what certain venues can do in terms of how many people you can have in. Do you feel like you understand everything New York State has done, and are you sort of satisfied with it so far?
No, I'm not sure that I understand everything New York State has done, and I know things continue to change, and there are some, that confusion makes me nervous because it also makes me, realize that people, the actual individuals that are supposed to be, kind of compliant with this guidance are, might be as confused. And that means that, it gets a little dangerous. I mean, for starters, I'm just going to say we have no plans of exceeding any limits that might compromise the safety, and comfort level of those who would be inside the space, inside the avenue. So, this whole idea of proof of vaccination or negative COVID, test, that's not even something that I'm focused on because we really are going to continue to keep our numbers down, keep social distancing, hand washing is mandatory when you enter the avenue, and keep our and mostly keep our youth programming, at a manageable rate for staff and mentors who are working with youth, because there are no guarantees. When people start talking about the efficacy rate, I think that those numbers are great, except for the fact that that the spread, is not something that is entirely preventable. We know that 94% has something to do with people not getting sick from or being hospitalized or showing symptoms of COVID, but does that actually mean that we're not still spreading, COVID is not still being spread until it's completely eradicated. And then what happens to those who are still vulnerable because they have not been vaccinated or because, they are in that, they end up being in that, 6% that does end up getting sick or they're already immunocompromised. It's just not something that I'm willing to risk, just yet. We're still just gonna err on the side of safety first and foremost, and keep going with some of the things that we know are working, have worked. We've had programs. We ran a summer program last summer, with zero outbreaks, and we did that by keeping our numbers small, keeping our practices, our hygiene practices, pretty strict, and by using a lot of common sense, and not mm-hmm. relying on information that's constantly changing.
Well, and before I let you go here, Rena, why don't you tell listeners then what you are excited about, what's happening at Avenue Black Box?
Oh, we're really excited about a lot of the programs that are going. We've got an RPO partnership, a collaboration that is about to be released on May 15th through social media and our websites. This was a program that project that was fun to get back into production, but in a safe way. We shot videos, little scenes, outside. And socially distanced in a way that, we got a chance to get the youth back involved in production, but didn't have to compromise their safety. So we're excited about that coming out May 15th. And our summer program being similar, ways that we can work outdoors. We're actually, one thing I'm really excited about is that we're actually we're facilitating the transformation of a vacant lot right across the street from the avenue into a space that can be a performance space, can be just a gathering space, a cool literary space for poetry readings, and just infused with some art and positivity and some mindfulness activities that we have planned too. So we're excited about that. That's going to go through the summer, and hopefully we'll get a chance to unveil it to the public with the community in early fall.
Always nice to talk to you, Rena. Thank you for making time for us.
Oh, of course. Nice talking to you, too.
Rena Golden is the founder and artistic director of the Avenue Black Box Theater, and we've got a long list of guests joining us this hour. Rena was the first, but we're talking to venue owners, theaters, arts organizations, indoor entertainment. We're talking about what is happening right now in this community, what is available in terms of indoor entertainment, and frankly, how the state guidelines have changed. And what that means for all of us who want to go out to a show, who want to go to a class, who want to go have a night out. And, especially if it's indoors, can we do that? What are the limitations? And it's been an adjustment. So let me welcome our next two guests. Casey Sullivan is CEO and founder and director of the UUU Art Collective. Casey, welcome. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And Christina Kaiser is director of the Yards Collective. Christina, welcome to you.
Thanks so much. It's great to be here.
Christina, let me start with you. I'll ask both of you the same question. First, briefly, why don't you describe what it is that you guys do and how has the pandemic impacted what you're doing right now? And I'll start with Christina and the Yards Collective.
Sure. Yeah. So the Yards Collective, we're a community art space located in the Rochester Public Market. Primarily, our function is to serve our studio renters. We've got about 20, 22 studio renters that use the space. But we also have an art gallery. We do programming. So with COVID, we pretty much had to put a halt on all our gallery shows, canceled most of our shows through the summer, and our focus really shifted to making sure that our studio renters were safe, and we were really lucky that we were able to pivot in that way.
Okay. Casey Sullivan, can you describe your perspective on this then?
Yeah, sure. So this is UUU Gallery, and we're at 153 State Street. We've been closed since the start, and we are since right in March, we're running up to our first year anniversary. We're an art exhibition space, a bar, a music club, and we're just opening up again now this Friday for an exhibition by Sheila Nicolin. This will be our first time getting the doors back open.
How many people can come in and see it, Casey?
Our occupancy is 84, but we're having a little limited, but beyond that, we're watching the tickets at the door. So we're working right about like 60 or so, depends.
And Casey, do the state guidelines make sense to you? In other words, what you're going to need to do to either limit capacity, to check for proof of vaccination, all of the things that the state and the governor have talked about, does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it's complicated because it's changing so much. Now that we're just getting the doors back open, we expect to learn things as we go. But we're just taking as much caution as we can, and then talking to a lot of the business owners in the community, and bouncing off a lot of ideas with them and see what they've experienced, those who've been open.
Yeah, and Christina, I'm curious to know if you not only view the state guidelines as sort of at least easy enough to decipher that you know what you've got to do. But I'm also curious to know if you think that a big venue, a place that can accommodate 500 people versus a place that can accommodate 50, if there is a difference in the impact right now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think so. We've been open since October, having shows. And, what's the grace about our space is there tends to be kind of a nice flow. People have been really respectful. And really, like, our bread and butter isn't made by the gallery shows. That's just kind of the bonus offering that we have. In planning for the summer and the programming that we're doing, we've been also lucky enough to be able to expand some of that out into the public market and utilize that space as well. But when it comes to trying to think about scaling this to like a larger venue, I mean, it's so hard to plan because everything's changing all the time, and trying to keep up on what the most current things are is really difficult. So, I mean, I am grateful that we are at the scale that we're at, because trying to plan an event for 500 people, man, that the challenge is there. I cannot even imagine. So, yeah, it's been very difficult to stay on top of the constantly changing restrictions.
What do you most need from New York State and from government right now, Christina?
Clarity, consistency. I do, it's really hard to, try and get all those proofs of vaccination or tests and things like that. So I don't know if there's any, I need to talk to some other business owners, but are there any ways to kind of streamline that and make that easier so we can do these events more successfully?
That's a very interesting point and an interesting question. And it may be that for a while, we're all just going to have to get used to pulling out our vaccination cards. I should get mine laminated because I'm already beating the heck out of it. And, you know, so I think we will have to get used to that. But I'm curious, you know, Christina, when you think about having to do that, some of it may be difficult if the public is not ready for it. You know, if an attending public doesn't know that they need to present it, I imagine most people have their cards with them and it won't be an issue. But do you see communication and sort of expectations need to be communicated well? Is that part of all of this?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think it's really, really, part of the challenge is making sure that people, you know what the expectations are, know what the boundaries are. And it's hard when you go to a restaurant and see it, you know, see all these people without masks on and, you know, there's they're following their guidelines, but then, you know, then you go to another space and it feels completely different. So if New York State could put out, you know, something that, you know, made things feel a little bit more consistent, I definitely think that would be helpful in communicating that.
Yeah, I can understand the frustration or just, you know, maybe the headache that comes from the challenge of just trying to understand, trying to stay on top of things. Casey, when it comes to the vaccination requirement for attendees of events and indoor spaces, et cetera, any concerns there for you, or do you think that that'll go smoothly?
Well, I hope for it to go smoothly. I bounce off Christina with it. If it remains consistent in the communication, then it very well may. For us, we won't have those, but, you know, we'll be working with the business community and seeing whatever everybody else's response will be.
What do you most need, Casey, from state government right now?
I bounce off Christina again with the clear communication, consistent communication. You know, keeping things so we don't feel as though we have to check up and sort of worry about it every step of the way and start to focus on other things, you know, would be the best offering, I think.
Okay. And before I let both of you go, Casey, you want to give New York State a grade? How are they doing on communicating and offering sort of reasonable expectations? What's the grade you'd give New York State right now?
I do a C+.
Okay. Fair enough. Christina?
Yeah, I was going to go with a C.
Okay. Just from maybe inconsistency or lack of communication?
Yeah, inconsistency, lack of communication. I mean, this entire time, it's been very, very difficult to find the information that applies to what our business parameters are. There's a lot of guesswork involved, and it's been really difficult to navigate.
All right. And as I let you go, Christina Kaiser, Director of the Arts Collective, remind people where to find you and what you got coming up next.
Yeah. So you can find us at theyardsrochester.com or at The Yards on Facebook and Instagram. And we've got a lot of really great summer programming coming up. This week we kick off figure drawing. And then we also have a team program and a residency program, and the deadlines for those applications are actually today, so at midnight. So those are some really great offerings that we're looking forward to having again.
Thank you for being with us. Good luck to you. I know this hasn't been easy. Thank you very much, Christina.
Thank you so much.
Casey Sullivan, let people know where to find the UUU Art Collective and what you have coming up next.
Great. Yeah, we're at 153 State Street, UUUArtCollective.com. And UUU Art Collective at its Instagram and Facebook. This weekend, Friday, May 14th, at 7 o'clock, the doors open for Sheila Nicholin's exhibition, Indoor Fever Dream. And at 8 o'clock, Sheila will be giving a discussion about her work. She's coming in from Detroit. And at 8:30, Curtis Lavelle, one of my favorite musicians coming up from Buffalo, will start her performance.
Thanks for making the time, and good luck to you, Casey.
No doubt. Thank you.
Casey Sullivan is CEO, founder, and director of the UUU Art Collective. And as I welcome our next guest, let me also just address one question that some listeners have shared. Mary Lou, for example, in Irondequoit wrote in asking, what are the chances the Clothesline Arts Festival at the MAG will happen in September? And as producer Megan Mack notes to Mary Lou, and I want to share this with all of listeners, in case you missed it, we talked festivals recently, and we tried to sort of set the landscape for what festivals are doing. Some are canceling entirely, like Park Ave, like Cornhill. Others are scaling it down, making some changes, like the Lilac Festival. The Clothesline Festival is essentially operating as if it will be a full sort of, for lack of a better term, typical or normal festival. So, and the jazz festival recently canceled. So it's sort of different festival to festival. That was a separate conversation. We're mostly focused this hour on indoor venues or venues that are mostly indoors. Entertainment, theater, art, comedy clubs, places like that. You know, how are they dealing with these changing state guidelines? Do they make sense? And what do we need to know if we're going to be attending, whether it's vaccination cards, proof of vaccination, proof of COVID tests, etc. And our next guest comes to us from the Rochester Brainery. The owner of the Rochester Brainery is Daniel Ramo, who's back with us now. Thanks for making time, Daniel. How are you?
I'm good. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
I'm good. And, you know, I'm just trying to sort of understand what these changes mean for all of these different businesses. So do the changes affect the Brainery? Kind of why don't you tell listeners what the current rules and guidelines are for your business and remind them what it is that you do at the Brainery?
Yeah. So we are a community classroom and event space. So we offer classes both in person and online. And we also offer a space for events for bridal showers, baby showers, business meetings, weddings, and all that kind of fun stuff. So our event space, since we're a multi-purpose space, I think some other businesses in Rochester fall under this as well. We actually are following guidelines for a few different categories. So we've been asked to follow the trade school guidelines for our classes. Even though we're not really a school and there are ticketed events, we've been asked to follow the trade school guidelines. And then for our events, our more traditional events, we're following kind of like those food service catering guidelines. And so for us, our classes right now are limited in capacity. We're following 6-foot social distancing. It's tricky. We really can't even reach the 50% kind of capacity limit there with 6-foot social distancing unless folks who sign up together are able to sit at the same table. They're kind of part of that same household or quarantine team. And then for events, it's a bit of a larger capacity, but we're a small venue. So our max capacity is 60 people regardless. So as some of these indoor social gathering limits increase, it doesn't really affect us so much. What will change for us is any ability to be at 100% capacity, you know, if there is the vaccination or a negative COVID test, or when, you know, some of these catering guidelines change, kind of a self-service buffet kind of thing. So some of those things will kind of change things for us. But that's kind of where we're at.
Yeah. And on the subject of people coming back in person and the proof of vaccination, a listener named Michael emails to say, Evan, don't laminate your vaccination card. You may need it for future booster shots. Make copies and you laminate those. Have a great day. That is not something I actually thought about. And I think that's probably good advice because I got the Johnson & Johnson. Johnson & Johnson has been engaged in a study to try to figure out, do they need a second shot? My guess is a lot of us will end up with another dose no matter what we got, whether it's at 6 months or a year or whatever. So maybe I won't laminate that. But I'm going to try not to wear my vaccination card out. Daniel Ramo at the Rochester Brainery, again, sort of, does that make sense to you? How to verify, and is any concerns there?
I mean, for us, I know that there is the app that you can download for New York State for verification. Of course, the name is escaping me at the moment. Evan, do you know the name of the app?
Is it the pass, right?
Yes, that's what it is. Yeah, there's the pass that you
Excelsior
can...
Excelsior Pass?
Yes, Excelsior Pass, thank you. Or kind of showing a proof of vaccination. For us, we haven't really had to do that for events. Because we are a small event space, we are kind of under that social gathering limit as it is that wouldn't require. I know that there are some larger venues in Rochester that may have done that to increase their capacity kind of on this last round of reopening, but that didn't really affect us again because we're a venue on the smaller side.
Now, you have classes all throughout the year. You have, I don't know, countless classes on such a wide range of interesting things, and people have met their lives have changed there. They've made friendships there. You've had people who want to get married there, who met in a class at the Brainery. So this is part of the fabric of this community. And I am curious to know if your students are saying they want, I mean, do you feel like you've got a kind of a finger on the pulse of whether the average person wants to be back in person or still wants to be only outdoors or online?
Yeah, I mean, I'm constantly asking that question, particularly.
You're asking the students, right, yeah.
Yeah, I'm asking the students, yeah, like on Instagram, I utilize the Instagram stories feature to ask questions. And I would say about every other week, I'm posing that question and seeing how students are feeling. And a lot of folks are still interested in learning online. Some of that is because of COVID. Some of that is because they found it easy to transition from work to class without having to drive anywhere. And then some folks are really ready to be back in person, and we are doing some stuff in person. We do outdoor walking tours. We're doing outdoor classes at the Hideaway this summer. So we have some outdoor venues that we work with. You know, so we are trying to offer all of the options based on everyone's comfort level, what they're interested in, what works for them during this time, because I certainly understand, you know, everyone feeling a little bit different depending on, you know, people you live with, you know, vaccination status, if you have, you know, an underlying condition, different things like that. Everyone just has a different comfort level. So we're trying to offer a little bit of something for everybody.
You want to offer a grade for New York State on how they've done handling this?
You know, that's a hard one. I mean, I'll just go along with what was said before that, like C plus, why not? I think, you know, I think that when the guidelines come out, when the full kind of guidelines are updated on the 19th, like when I have a new reopening document to look at, I feel like there will be clarification. We'll see. Right now, I'm still a little bit confused. I think things could be a bit more clear, but I mean, luckily we have a business community that talks to each other, that's asked questions, at least in my experience and my group of business owners that I chat with regularly. So we're usually able to kind of find those answers, but we do have to go looking for those answers sometimes and looking for that clarification. And it would be nice to just have that clarification kind of already there right up front.
So the answer, it sounds like, on what you need from the government, particularly New York State, is just proactive communication and clarity.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Where to find the Rochester Brainery for people who want to take classes with you online, in person, outdoors, or whatever?
RochesterBrainery.com is going to be the best place for that.
Well, good luck to you. I know this has not been, the easiest year for any small business, particularly those who are trying to navigate the guidelines. And I know you're doing your best. Good luck to you and the many teachers and the students who love the space there and what you do. Thank you, Danielle. We'll talk again soon.
Thank you.
All right. Daniel Ramo, owner of the Rochester Brainery. And after we take our only break here, we're going to come back and talk about what some indoor music venues are doing. We're going to talk about some of the changes that JCC has tried to make as we understand the expectations for everybody when it comes to small businesses, indoors primarily, and crowds, accommodating groups, trying to get back to normal, and what New York State will and will not allow. That's coming up on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on The Next Connections. Will you ever again dress the way that you did before the pandemic began? Will you go back to wearing, quote, work clothes? Or will you dress more formally? Do you want to? Does that offer more structure and inspiration? Or do you think it's sweatpants forever? Is the world changing permanently? The perspectives on fashion and dressing for work Tuesday. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. I want to welcome in Phil Fitzsimmons, the owner of Anthology, who's with us. Hi, Phil. Thanks for making time.
Hey, how's it going?
Very good, sir. And Doug Kelly
is
Doug Kelly is the talent buyer for The Bug Jar, who's also with us. Hi, Doug.
How's it going?
Good. Well, I'm glad both of you took the time here, and this is a great chance to understand what primarily indoor music venues are dealing with. Phil, let me start with you. What's going on in terms of live music, of events, of just regular sort of crowds, and what you understand from New York State, what you're allowed to do?
Evan, we're not entirely sure what we're allowed to do as far as New York State is concerned. You know, with the size of our venue being a 1,000-cap venue and our business being a little different from, like, the Bug Jar, we really don't have shows unless there's a tour coming through town. You know, our business model is a little bit more of the touring business model, so until the big bands come back, we don't even really kind of pay attention. It's too hard for us to make the economics work with, you know, 150 or even a couple hundred people in our room. We need the, you know, crowds that are 500 plus. So we really got hit hard by COVID, and we're kind of, you know, the last to open. We're an indoor venue that's a 1,000-person, you know, cap facility. So we've just been resigned to the fact that we'll be the last guys open. You know, we have a lot of shows booked tentatively right now for the fall. Some are as early as like September. The majority of them are October and November and December. And we've just been following the lead of the tours of the large bands and their management, because they've seemed to be tied into sort of, you know, the research on a national level of where things are and where things are going. Because we also don't want to open up for a big show for, say, somebody like Joy Wave, and folks are afraid to come out. So we've been kind of using the metrics that the record companies and the tour companies are using to sort of gauge response. But we really don't know. You know, you can go down to the East End and see bars that look like they're crowded and bouncing back. But when it comes time to sell a $25 or $30 ticket to a concert, we don't know if people will be right back out and, you know, comfortable with being shoulder to shoulder. You know, and we're not also sure how many people will be vaccinated and how we can really, you know, qualify or quantify that. We already get little emails from people. Are you going to make me be vaccinated to come in there? So we're just trying to kind of be sensible and figure out what the, you know, what the best process will be moving forward.
How do you feel about making people be vaccinated before they come in?
I feel like if I don't, I personally don't have a problem with it. You know, we make you stop drinking if you're going to be driving your car after a certain number of cocktails. You know, it's the law for our bar staff to not overserve someone. There's plenty of public safety mechanisms in place anytime you go to a hospitality or live event venue. So to me, it's just operational. It's not political and it's not value-based. It's just kind of one of those social norms that you live with because it makes sense. I don't know how we're going to enforce it. I definitely know how to look at someone's license and know if they're of age, and we definitely use what do we call that from the SLA? I think it's like a TAPS or a TOPS system that our bar staff is trained on to be able to evaluate whether someone's had too much alcohol or is, you know, under the influence, and we cut them off. I don't know how we would figure out whether someone's vaccinated or not. So that's pretty difficult. You know, if there isn't some sort of identification that's reliable, then I don't know. But the rumor I'm hearing is that if someone's vaccinated, or if your entire, you know, clientele that's coming out to a concert is vaccinated, then you can have your full occupancy. And if they're not, I don't know where this is going to land. And I know that, you know, when this all started out, we are feeling, you know, that we're in the hospitality business. A big part of our job when people come to concerts is making sure they're safe. You know, when they walk into our room, we want to make sure that we're looking after them so they can relax and have a good time and dance and have some drinks and know that we professionally are looking after their well-being. So that sort of sentiment in our staff and the way we do business at Anthology carries through to, you know, this kind of situation with COVID and people's safety from a healthcare standpoint. So, you know, we're really concerned because we're really concerned about our customers and their well-being. That's what hospitality is. It's not just the music. When you come there, you know, you're going to be taken good care of and you're going to be treated with respect and looked out for. And so we're a little conflicted at the moment trying to figure out how we're going to move forward with that. But you know, we'll take the information when the time comes and make a, you know, a value-based decision that we can live with and that we feel good about.
Doug, what's
and that our customers feel good about.
Yeah, Doug, what's the situation at the Bug Jar?
I would say it's pretty similar. Phil definitely covered a lot of the topics that are, you know, affecting the Bug Jar as well. While we do mostly cater to the local bands in town, I mean, we do host touring acts. It's just that, like Phil said, the majority of the touring industry is not returning until, you know, late this summer at the earliest, and then fall. And a lot of tours have pushed back to next year. So, and recently they didn't lift the food requirement restrictions until like 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. So we couldn't have opened to begin with. And from my understanding and talking to the owners, they really don't want to open up until some of the restrictions are lifted. And, you know, because it's a small room. It's really hard to socially distance in a small bar. I mean, you're talking like 10 people in the concert room socially distant. So it's not really ideal for anyone involved, you know, the bands, the bar trying to sell drinks.
Well, can I ask you about that, Doug? I mean, this is I admit, this is one of the things I just don't get, and I'd love to ask the governor. What is the science that says vaccinated people still should be physical distancing indoors? There is not science that supports right. It, as I see. There is speculation, or there is, quote, abundance of caution, all of which I respect. But if you're going to enforce this, I don't think there's science behind it. And so, Doug, if there were a, hey, full capacity, if you've got proof of vaccination, does that work? Does that, you know, make it easier for the Bug Jar to really kind of get moving again?
If it applies to their occupancy, to my knowledge, everything has been based off of large venue capacity. So I really don't know what the updated terms are for a small cap room like the Bug Jar. But like Phil said, it's going to be hard to enforce the vaccine. I know there are vaccine cards, but I've already seen, you know, rumors talking about people buying counterfeit ones, and, you know, the shot is free, and people are paying hundreds of dollars to get a fake card. So
I don't get that. I mean, I don't mean to laugh at that. I'm sure it's happening, right? But I mean, boy, oh boy, you're right, Doug. I mean, it's free. It's a free shot, everybody, and it's going to be everywhere. But maybe we need incentive. This is why I kind of want to wrap real quick with Doug and Phil on. We're starting to see different states, different localities do different incentives. Sometimes it's a gift card if you're willing to get vaccinated. Sometimes, I don't know, get a vaccine, get a free beer. Do you think some sort of incentive is needed, Doug, to get especially the concert-going crowd, which skews younger, but not always? What do you think, Doug?
I think it's just a matter of time for all the vaccine sites to catch up to the people that, you know, couldn't get in, because it was really only open to frontline workers for a while. And I think people wanted to wait to see how the reactions were, you know, after your first and second shot. So I don't even really think incentives are necessary. I think people just wanted to wait out and see, you know, what the data was. And, you know, because there's a lot of information out there, and it's a lot to wade through when you're trying to figure out fact from fiction and, you know, all that stuff.
Absolutely. So. I think that's well said. And for anybody still on the fence, we respect that. In fact, we're going to have a conversation later this week with people who had been on the fence and had only recently made up their mind, and we always respect that. Phil, how do you feel about incentives for vaccination?
I think it's a good idea, Evan. You know, for me, I was surprised to see the news a couple days ago about the nursing homes in Ontario County and in Newark, where Rochester Regional Health had a huge number of residents in the nursing homes that caught COVID and they were vaccinated. You know, they were asymptomatic, but it was the first time for me locally where I saw, oh, okay, so here's a whole bunch of elderly people in a local nursing home that just caught COVID, 17 to 20 of them, I think it was. They had all been vaccinated. the three people that hadn't been vaccinated, one of them is in intensive care in a local hospital, and the other two are struggling. So I think we're now starting to see real-world examples where, yes, okay, maybe that's the rationalization for some sort of social distancing, even if you're vaccinated. But the good thing is, apparently the vaccine works in keeping you asymptomatic if you were to be reinfected.
Yeah, I mean, that's what they say. They say asymptomatic or turning COVID into a common cold. And I think the story you just shared is an important one. Phil, I got to be real quick here because we're going to bring in some other guests. But you want to give a quick grade to New York State? What's the grade so far? How are they doing?
You know, I honestly haven't been paying attention.
I for incomplete.
I've given them an incomplete.
There you go. How about you, Doug?
No comment.
Doug's going to recuse himself. That's fair.
Yeah.
Doug Kelly's talent buyer for the Bug Jar. Good luck to you guys, Doug. Keep us abreast of everything that's coming up here for you guys. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Evan.
And Phil Fitzsimmons from Anthology. Good luck to you, Phil. Can't wait to be out there when you guys have touring acts right back here. Thank you, Phil.
Great. Thanks, Evan. Bye-bye.
All right. Let me bring in our next couple of guests here as we continue right on down the line, trying to understand everything facing primarily indoor venues. But, boy, you're about to hear that they've been very creative. Ralph Maranto is a creative guy by nature, the artistic director of the JCC of Greater Rochester. Nice to have you back here, Ralph. I wish the circumstances were different, but nice to talk to you.
Always a pleasure.
Danny Hoskins is artistic and managing director of the Blackfriars Theater. Danny, welcome back to the program. How are you?
I'm doing well, Evan. Thanks for having us.
All right. So, Ralph, our colleagues, Becca Rafferty and City News, were, I think, first to report on some very creative work that JCC was in the midst of doing, trying to figure out space, trying to figure out where you could perform and what you could do. And then, of course, you get new guidelines. Things change seemingly by the day here. But can you kind of set the backdrop for what's going on at JCC, what you've been working on, and maybe what you understand the new state guidelines to be and how that impacts you, Ralph?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, we've been talking for a year about what are we going to do? When are we going to do it? What's going to be the possibilities? What's going to be the rules? And it changes daily. And you can announce that all of a sudden events can happen, but you have to have things in the pipeline. You have to have shows rehearsed. You have to have shows that can budget to be able to fill when they tell you it's 33% capacity. And you have to have audiences that are ready to start feeling comfortable sitting in a dark theater with people nearby. So we made the decision even before the rules started changing that what we were going to aim for was a large outdoor venue for the summer, that we were going to start bringing live theater back, but we were going to do it outdoors. We felt like, first of all, regardless of the capacity limits, we'll be able to put more people outdoors and still keep them socially distant, but also people will feel safer in the summer being able to sit outside and enjoy some music and enjoy some live theater. So we started planning for that. And then we started looking at the cost of putting a tent in the backyard of the JCC. We had the space for it, but the cost of putting a tent and a stage and lighting and all the things that come with it was absolutely huge. So instead of putting up a tent for a couple of shows, we decided let's put up a tent for 4 months and let's invite the entire community to come and join us. So you've got Danny on the call. Blackfriars Theater is going to be using our space for 3 shows. I've been working with the RPO. They're looking at 5 or 6 shows this summer. We'll have 4 shows of our own. We're going to kick it off with opening weekend, June 5th and 6th, with You've Got a Friend, the music of Carole King and James Taylor. We're talking to Abilene about booking some shows, Comedy at Carlson, and hopefully keeping the tent up long enough to become a fringe venue in September. So we're just going to have so much amazing arts and culture that people can enjoy outside that it'll start getting audiences ready to be in a crowd again, to be part of an audience again, and then hopefully by fall we'll be able to start moving people indoors again.
Fascinating. When the new state guidelines came, was there a moment where you went, you got to be kidding me, or did you think, no problem, full speed ahead? What did you think?
Well, so Rebecca from City called me up. You know, she wrote this lovely article about what we were doing in the tent, and she called me up and she said, okay, new guidelines are out. Are you still doing your tent? And I went, what? So, you know, immediately went and checked it out, what it was. And, okay, they said that we're removing restrictions, but unless you're doing the vaccine and testing requirement for each person, you still have to keep 6-foot distance. Well, in my 300-seat theater, 6 foot, is still only going to be about 100 people. And poor Danny at Blackfriars Theater, 6 foot is about like 4 people. Okay, I'm exaggerating. So we decide, well, no, we still think people want to be outside. We still want to make the outdoor thing happen. So the beautiful thing about it now is that we can have even more than the 200 limit that used to be for outside. We can now go up to 288, which was our numbers that we had in the theater, and do it outside and still not have to start asking people for the testing results.
Okay. Do you want to affix a grade for New York State's work so far on these issues?
I'm not going to go there because they've been supportive of all the things we're trying to do. No, I would say incomplete was what people said earlier, and I think that that's a good thing. It's been inconsistent. It's been confusing. I think I agree that we need to be cautious, and I agree that people are not necessarily ready to be crowded in a crowded space again. On the other hand, why do people have to be sitting outside and 6 foot distance and wearing a mask? All three of those requirements for outdoor seems a little extreme to me, but I'm not a scientist, so I'm just going to hear what they have to say, and I'm going to go with it, and I'm going to try to make an environment where people feel safe so they come in and start enjoying theater and music again.
Oh, well, no. I mean, the scientists agree with you, actually. So the scientists do. Could the state have communicated more clearly about this, Ralph?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Danny, when it comes to what you're doing, can you do two things for me? I mean, as Ralph mentions, you know, you're going to be utilizing that space, but you also have to make decisions on what you're going to do with your own space at Blackfriars. And for listeners who haven't been there, I mean, it's one of the really cool indoor entertainment spaces in the region. What can you do? What are you going to do? What does the summer look like for you, indoors and outdoors now, Danny?
Yeah, great. Just like Ralph, our thought was to come back outdoors would be the safest way for our artists, for our patrons, and probably the most comfortable way for the majority to come back. So we actually had started to build a plan to do what Ralph did in his backyard in our parking lot, and then realized it would probably take just as much manpower, energy, time, money for us to do it here. And then we would have to run it, and we would have to manage it and bring it indoors every night. And heard that Ralph was doing it over there in the great space out back in the JCC, and they have a huge space, and they're set up for that. And said, no, well, scrap that. Let's just go rent from Ralph. We've been partners for a number of projects, so it seems like a really natural partnership to continue. So our goal has always been to be outdoors for the summer, to welcome everybody back, both artists and patrons, in probably the most comfortable or safest environment before we move indoors. So we're not doing anything indoors for the summer other than rehearsing. Our cast will be rehearsing indoors for the summer for the outdoor productions. And then our goal is to bring back our traditional year-round season from October to June. Instead of September to May, we're going to try October to June this year. And we'll be back indoors starting in the fall, assuming everything keeps going smoothly and safely.
Okay. What do you make of the state guidelines and the way they've been communicated?
I think I'm on the same train that everybody else is on. It's been a little inconsistent. It's been a little confusing. We're grateful that we're back and open and that we're able to operate. We can, you know, get back to work and start putting plans in motion. We're grateful that our artists are going to have opportunity to come back and perform, and that our patrons are eager, very eager and energetic to get back to the theater. And they've been so supportive over this whole year. I think it's tricky. As Ralph says, we have 126 seats in here, but the way we're structured, which is a little bit more of a U than a traditional straight proscenium stage, we're looking at, with the 6 foot requirement, we're looking at maybe we could get 20 people in here, regardless of capacity, regardless of the amount of capacity that we could have whenever the new rules are set up. If we're still to the 3 foot or 6 foot distance between people, then we're still stuck with, you know, maybe 20, 25 people in the audience.
20 people when you've got 128 seats, even if you've got proof of vaccination?
If the way it reads right now, from what I understand, the way it reads right now, the social distancing rules still apply. So it's a little confusing because they say, you know, the governor's announcement just last week, I think it was, said that you could be elbow to elbow, or insinuated you could be elbow to elbow if you were vaccinated, if you had a negative test, that you could be at full capacity. He mentioned you could be at full capacity. But as far as what's written or what I've been reading, It still also says you have to comply with the social distancing rules, the social distancing guidelines. As long as you're doing that, you can have people in the building. So I read that as saying, you know, well, one says full capacity, elbow to elbow, and one, the inference is elbow to elbow, and yep. The other one still says you got to stick to 6 feet. So not quite sure, and that's also partly why we're holding off until the fall, because, you know, there's going to be 4 or 5 or 6 new iterations
yep.
of what the rules are going to be before we get to October. So we're kind of trying to play a little bit of a long game this summer by giving us the time to figure out all of what rules will be in place that we can safely say by the time we get to the fall. And we've been working close with Ralph so that our rules and regulations also mirror what the JCC is doing. Since we share a lot of patrons and we share a lot of artists, our goal is to try and keep consistent, at least within ourselves, so that there's some structure that's grounded.
Yeah, Danny, everything Danny's saying is so consistent with what we've experienced from those who operate indoor entertainment, which is that you can read what we've heard from the state and it's still sort of ambiguous in certain ways or confusing as to the justification. But as we close here, Danny Hoskins, where can people find maybe online a guide to what you've got coming up through Blackfriars?
Yeah. Yeah, we're going to be at the JCC this summer for 3 outdoor productions, a 70th anniversary concert on June 11th and 12th in the summer, July 28th through August 1st, and then another production September 10th through 12th. Check it out, blackfriars.org. You'll find out what we're doing over at the JCC for this summer.
All right, and Ralph, the JCC website to find out more.
JCCRochester.org. We're going to have the full schedule up in the next 4 or 5 days.
And you are less than a month until you kick off what? Oh, Carole King and James Taylor. Great stuff. I love that. Ralph, as always, thank you, sir. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
Danny Hoskins. Thank you, Danny.
Thank you, Evan.
Good luck to every indoor venue who's doing their best. Rob Braden, Emma Ray Stein, Megan Mack, Evan Dawson saying thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.